most important thing that I would say is just to restrict your screen time. This is actually like a huge drain on our qi, and especially for women, it's a huge drain on the blood system. So, you know, the more that we spend on our screens, we're actually unaware of that we are sort of leaking a lot of energy.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to our first episode. We're super excited to have Bernard Kwan joining us today. Bernard is an amazing Tai Chi master who I really admire, and he spent over two decades mastering all sorts of Eastern wellness practices like Tai Chi, Qigong, martial arts, yoga, and Zen and Taoist meditation. Today, he'll share how Tai Chi can help you find peace, take care of your body, and boost your daily health. Let's dive in. Hey, Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, good morning. Hi.
Morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you. So I think I mentioned that this is my first podcast. So, you know, if there's anything that, you know, you want to talk about or slow me down, anything, please let me know.
I'm super honored that I'm your first guest.
Yeah. So, you know, we've known each other for quite a while now, and I we've never had this chat where you never told me about your journey to becoming this Tai Chi master that so many people really look to you and respect. So I would love to, you know, have you share that journey here today.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to share as well. Like, it's been quite a ride, I think, over all of these years. And I don't know how I sort of ended up in this place, but sort of here I am. But I think I can probably start just with my journey. About, you know, 20, 30 years ago, I was really interested in martial arts. You know, like many people growing up in Asia, you see a lot of the martial arts movies, and you read a lot of the comics, and you think about, wow, the superpowers and stuff that you can have. And sort of at that time, I just started training in martial arts. I started with a Japanese art called Aikido, which is a little bit similar to judo. And and then I sort of moved from there, later on, moving to things like Tai Chi, and then sort of more esoteric Chinese styles, like Baguazhang or Yi Quan and Xin Yi Quan. Yeah, so like very internal styles, which usually work a lot with the energy. And, you know, through that journey, I realized that a lot of the things that we read about in the martial arts novels, things like working with like qi, or like feeling the energy centers in the body, were real and were true. And then I wanted to sort of delve deeper into this, and I started looking for teachers mainly in Hong Kong and Taiwan, and just recently in Southeast Asia, who've managed to preserve many of the really traditional arts and traditional lineages. And traditional practices, because a lot was lost during the Cultural Revolution and just with the modernization and passage of time. So as I started to delve deeper into this, I felt that I had a little bit of a purpose and a mission to kind of keep these traditions alive and try and bring it back to the modern world. And my teacher, like about 5-6 years ago, before COVID, started encouraging me to go out and teach a little bit more. And then a friend offered me a space at her wellness studio, and it kind of started to snowball from there. And then I started holding regular classes and stuff. So, you know, right now I split my time, between, you know, teaching and also self-practice and exploration. And I do make regular trips to Southeast Asia and into Taiwan to meet my teachers there as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thanks for sharing. I think, you know, for a lot of people, and I think you did mention all the different sort of, you know, exercises that you've done, from like martial arts to Tai Chi to, you know, the different types of modalities. Like, would love to sort of understand what the difference is between all of these, like, you know, how is, for somebody who's never done it before, like, what's the difference between Tai Chi, there's Qigong, there's martial arts, and then there's some of the other ones that you also mentioned. How would you explain that to somebody?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the very base, we're working with qi, which is unfortunately a little bit of an amorphous word in Chinese, because depending on the context, it can mean different things. But just, you know, for simplicity's sake, it's really kind of just working with the energy in the body, which is at a very basic level, a kind of bioelectric energy. And so this underpins a lot of the different modalities that I do. So for Qigong, for most part, it's really for at the beginning, it's for health. So you know, you work with breath, you work with movement, to move the qi around, to remove the blockages, to just get the body kind of working more efficiently, get the cellular functions to work more efficiently, the internal organs to work more efficiently, and yeah, and then just generally just raise the overall general level of health in the body. Then with some of the other arts that I do, like the martial arts, like Tai Chi or Bagua Zhang or Yi Quan, they really are more like martial arts. Although we work with the internal qi to generate power, a lot of the movements are you know, have applications. They have martial applications, and there is a real self-defense element as well, especially for Tai Chi, which kinds of gets overlooked, which kinds of many people perceive to be what, you know, old people do in the park. It's just a form of exercise.
I think growing up, you know, in Hong Kong, a lot of people would associate that, right? You would think 6 a.m., 7 a.m. in the morning, my grandparents are, you know, and it would be much slower, right? So for the younger generation, it's really hard to perceive something like Tai Chi as being more like a faster movement type of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, like younger people in Hong Kong, unfortunately, are and actually across Asia, they're sort of much more attracted to things like you know, mixed martial arts or Brazilian jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai, because you can get results very quickly, and it's very obvious the relationship of the training towards the effect and the output. But you know, I think for Tai Chi and so some of the Chinese arts, there are very intricate skills that are sort of embedded in there. And if you can find a good teacher, it's easy. It's kind of easy and really fascinating to sort of unpack it and say, oh, actually, I can do all of these things with the body in a very efficient way, which is a little bit different from just like going to the gym a lot and building up a lot of muscle. It's working with the fascial connections and yeah, the also like the energy in the body. In summary, I would just say, you know, Qigong is basis of a health practice for many people. And then yeah, Tai Chi and the others are really much more martial arts, like you would learn karate or Muay Thai or something like that.
I see. Okay. So I know a lot of our listeners will probably be very, very accustomed to doing yoga, right? So, and I know you're also a yoga practitioner, you know, you also practice yoga yourself. How would you compare, you know, these Tai Chi or Qigong to yoga? And as a yoga, you know, if you do yoga, how would you sort of maybe start doing and start exploring something like Tai Chi or Qigong in your daily practice?
I think the practices are quite complementary. I'm going to, yeah, so because both at their heart, the Qigong, the Tai Chi, the Qigong and the and yoga are spiritual practices, right? So they also want you to develop your body to sort of take you to a higher spiritual level. Okay, so I practiced yoga for a number of years, and I also got my yoga, you know, 200-year training license. And I do think, you know, for me, yoga and qigong and tai chi are very complementary practices. But because yoga comes from India, and then, you know, qigong and tai chi come from China, there are certain differences in emphasis between the two. Yeah. Unfortunately, what I find now with a lot of Western yoga is that it's become a little bit watered down. So there's a lot of emphasis on stretching and flexibility, And although there is some energy work, you know, with the breathing and the pranayama, it's probably less emphasized. So, you know, for normal practitioners, I would say that they're quite complementary practices because with Qigong, with Tai Chi, we also work to open the body, but it's opening the body in a different way. It's not just stretching the muscle connections, but we are also working with the fascia, with the joints, and opening up the body cavities so that there can be sort of more qi that will flow around in the body. Yeah. So I find that some of the breathing practices are quite different. With yoga, we tend to do breathing very high up in the body, whereas with Qigong and Tai Chi, we try to do something which we call abdominal breathing, which we breathe lower down into the lower abdomen. Yeah, and so yeah, I would say that the practices are very complementary. I have students who come in from, you know, like who are previous yoga practitioners, and they do find that they can achieve you know, a superior level of health or even a higher level in their own yoga practices by practicing Qigong as well.
I see, I see. So I've, you know, over COVID, I did start practicing some Tai Chi and Qigong. And I remember, and also like at your session, you mentioned the Dantian. Can you explain a little bit about that?
The Dantian is just our lower energy center, right? So if you practice some yoga before, it's sort of where the second chakra is. It's located a couple of inches below the navel. Yeah, so if you can imagine that there is a field, an energy field that resides down there below the navel, it sort of acts like a spare battery for us. You know, it's a place that can store qi. And yeah, so for most people, you know, when most people are born with the Dantian. So you're born with like a strong energy field when you're a baby. You're filled with energy, but as you grow up and as you enter puberty, that energy starts to get dispersed and goes into the growth and everything. So when you're an adult, actually the Dantian, the field has kind of dissipated. So part of the Qigong practice is very much about rebuilding the lower energy field, and then using it as a way to store qi. Yeah, because for most of us, we are when we practice Qigong, when we practice yoga, we're just working with the existing amount of qi that we have in the body. You know, some so that really kind of depends on the you know, your current state of health, your age, you know, how you're feeling that day, whether you've eaten or you slept well or not before. But you know, when we actually practice Qigong, we actually want to start to raise the overall level of qi or level of energy that you have in the body, and actually ha having a reservoir or a spare battery to store the qi is one of the main things that we work with in Qigong in order to achieve that. And a lot of the practices we do in the beginning are to start to build up that field and that sort of like the storage container, so we can generate more qi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
for women, I'm curious, you know, especially during like, you know, our period cycles and things like that, like you oftentimes feel a lack of energy, right? And I think
Right.
we spoke about this too, like with the hormonal changes and things like that. Like,
Right.
so how do these practices help women, you know, and support them on those health journeys?
Yeah, I think for women, I think the menstrual cycle is very much associated with the phases of the moon as well, right? So actually, for a very healthy woman in Chinese medicine, and also in some of our practices, it's actually best to be ovulating sort of during the to be he's menstruating during when the during the new moon, and then you are sort of ovulating during the full moon. Right. So, when we practice Qigong, it's about bringing a lot of our own circadian rhythms, like your sleep cycle, also these menstrual rhythms into a more of a natural state. So as we practice, I think a lot of women start to notice, and there are actually dedicated women's practices as well, to breathing exercises, meditation exercises that we can be done at different phases of the moon. But it starts you find it start to find that all your cycles start to become more regulated. So you feel that you start to feel that, oh, I would want to be sleeping at certain times, and then even your menstrual cycle will start to shift and start to sync with the more natural cycles of the earth. And then when that starts to happen, you find that a lot of the women's problems and women's periods and stuff, that a lot of that also starts to the pains might be lessened. And with the practice as well, some of these pains might be due to stagnant energy in the body. So it also actually helps flush out some of this stagnation. So again, that helps aids the whole menstrual cycle and relief of pain.
I see. And then at the same time, you're building up your chi and as well as your dantian, right?
So I mean, it's quite from a very basic perspective, I would say that your body is just like a big machine. We have like if you can imagine water running through pipes through your house. For a lot of people, that some of the pipes are leaky or broken or blocked. At a very basic level, we're about like flush using the water pressure and the water, which is the energy, just to flush out the system, open up the pipes, and just rebuild the connection, so everything works much more efficiently.
I see. Okay, I like that. I like that analogy. So, what about people with chronic conditions? How do these practices help people with anybody suffering from any chronic conditions?
Actually, you'll find that actually practice of Tai Chi and Qigong really are very, very good with chronic conditions. Things like autoimmune disease, asthma, diabetes. For me, and I think from a Chinese medicine perspective, sometimes these autoimmune diseases arise because our body is a little bit out of sync. Like I said, these practices help to restore the basic functioning of the organ systems and the various systems in the body. So again, from a very basic mechanistic model, the body circulates energy, it circulates blood, it circulates oxygen around around and to the various organs to keep everything running well. But again, like for asthma, for example, your whole lung system might not be getting the nutrition or the blood or the energy that it needs, right? And then that creates problems in that system. So with the Qigong, we start to regulate that. We remove some of the stagnant energy, remove some of the blockages. So you're getting adequate support for that system internally, and that the system naturally, the body has an intelligence of its own, and then it starts to heal itself.
So if somebody, wanted to try Tai Chi or Qigong, what is the best way for one to even access that, right? Because I think that for a lot of people, like yoga is very, you can find yoga instructors sort of everywhere, but then, you can try it on and then you can figure out like which yoga teacher that you like and which style you like, right? But I find that in the sort of like Chinese medicine or, in the TCM route, it's a lot harder to understand what the difference is and then B, identify your teacher and the styles. And also then each master has their own type of style, right? So, can you walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we're lucky enough nowadays to be ac actually have access to like almost too much information sort of online. Yeah, so I think, we're sort of lucky and unlucky in some ways. So like, trying to find an authentic Qigong teacher, it's not super easy. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who are teaching online. That there are that there are online resources in order to learn. So if you are living somewhere where it might be difficult to find a local studio which offers Qigong, there are online options. I wouldn't recommend just going on YouTube and pulling off some random videos, but there are schools which I can maybe recommend some links later. Online to start studying Qigong. I would another place that I would suggest would be which is great is that it would be if you're in the US or you have somewhere where there's a large Chinese community nearby, like a Chinatown or some Chinese schools. What I found is that they do usually have sort of community classes there. So there's always a Tai Chi teacher or a Qigong teacher or something offering those classes in addition to Chinese calligraphy and the usual plethora of Chinese art. So with a little bit of digging, I mean, with the great influx of increase in Chinese communities across the US, I think it's a little bit easier now to find someone with who can offer personalized teaching.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And I think, you know, the mental, right? The mental part is very important. And it's also something that we spoke about previously. I'm curious, how do these practices help any sort of how does it help aid with the mental portion of it?
I think I've been telling my students that actually after a while, the practice is like 80% mental and 20% physical. Because to a certain extent, the movement is just choreography. I think nowadays nobody disputes that there's a mind-body connection, right? So we're actually using the consciousness and the mind actually to move the chi for a lot of the time. It's just like placing your awareness on certain areas of the body and syncing with the breathing or syncing it with the movement is actually what causes the chi to mobilize and to flow actually. So for a lot of these practices that we do, it is as very much as well a kind of a mental disciplining type exercise, almost like a moving meditation as such. So as you start to get deeper and deeper into these practices, your whole body, your mind becomes more still, you become more embodied, you become less like lost in your thoughts, or like thinking about, oh, what should I be doing later? What do I want for lunch? And then you can just actually be very present in your body and in the movements. Because as the level of qi becomes stronger, you get actually very it's almost like drunk and absorbed into the whole feeling of, wow, it's really comfortable, this feeling of movement and flow that I'm actually achieving in my body.
Okay. So it's different than your traditional type of meditation where you're sitting down by yourself in a calm room. How is that different? Is there that difference?
Well, actually there's two parts to like Qigong and there's a Dong Gong which is like a moving part and there's actually a sitting part. So that the there we do have moving practices and we also have sitting practices which are very much more similar to traditional meditation practices that you see like from a Buddhist or some kind of like a Zen perspective. So we do have sitting practices as well and when we're sitting, then we can also move and mobilize the qi with our breathing or certain like hand movements or hand postures while we're sitting as well. Or we could just sit very quietly just to train the mind. So there is a sort of a suite of practices that are
Oh, I
associated
see.
as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then if we wanted to, I think, can you talk a little bit more about the mind-body connection? I find that really, really interesting.
I think, from a Taoist or a Buddhist or a traditional Chinese perspective, the mind and the body is not actually two separate things. It's actually a spectrum. So you can think about it as a spectrum of energy. So for the body dense is more dense, is more the physicality is more dense. So it's sort of a lower vibration of energy. So as energy has a lower vibration, it condenses into the physical world. But on a higher level, when energy sort of vibrates at a higher level, that actually is it might be the level of just of the energy in the body or the level of awareness and consciousness as well. So if we look at all of these things as sort of a continuum, we all the practices are actually working on several levels at the same time. And part of the part of the trick is syncing just the different levels and viewing them as kind of part of this totality rather than two separate things. I'm like driving my I'm sitting in my head and I'm driving my body kind of thing.
Okay. And
My teacher talked about it like a little bit like like you have a mental fluid, like and your body is sort of like a sponge, and then you can soak, the mental fluid into the body, just permeate it, and then that way you can actually sync the mind and body connection.
Okay. That's interesting. And for Tai Chi and Qigong, when we see people practicing out in parks and nature, is that part important? Can you do it at home? And why do people practice in nature? Why do we see that so often?
I mean, I think it's a function of several things. Of course, you can practice anywhere. And actually, in the beginning, for students who I find are a little bit, maybe not as healthy or a little bit weak, actually, I do recommend that them to practice inside because outside, you're also subject a little bit to the elements and the wind and the rain and all that. So it's perfectly fine to practice inside. I think people like to practice outside just because like in early mornings, you have the negative ions. We do recommend that actually the best times to practice are at sunrise and sunset. So between 5 and 7 a.m. and 5 and 7 p.m., actually the best times to practice Qigong for the body in terms of our natural rhythms. Just having more oxygen, being in the park and just being in a group and being in nature, that's also very very helpful in terms of being calming, but it's not a prerequisite. It's sort of like a bonus. So I would rather practice inside than outside on a very polluted, like slightly misty, like cold, damp day. So it's one has to be very attuned.
Where, how long did you've done your Buddhist studies at Hong Kong U, right?
I did my Buddhist studies at Hong Kong U. I spent 4 years there. So it's like early 2000s.
Okay, yeah, I would love to know more about sort of your Buddhist studies. I think that, it's something that is so pure, and I would love to know more about how people can take some of these principles and like adapt them into their daily lives.
So yeah, I mean, I'm also like a very avid reader, and I did spend my undergrad degree was in philosophy, and I did do my master's in Buddhist studies at Hong Kong University. So for me, also going back to what we talked about in terms of like the yoga and having the importance of having a very clear lineage. I think a lot of our practices are they're not sort of kind of timeless. They are sort of anchored within the structure of a more expansive tradition, and the tradition also teaches you why you're doing these things. It's not just for health's sake. It's not for power accumulation or being stronger for just being stronger's sake. It's anchored in a tradition of how to flourish as a human being and have it has a spiritual perspective as well about connection with the divine. When we sort of operate within these traditions, and if you study more of the philosophy, then there are things that we can do sort of on a psychological and just a practical ethical perspective that will help inform our Qigong practice as well. So when you have a lot of it is about having the right mindset as well. So we talked about how the mind interacts with the body, but the mindset is also very important. When we cultivate a mindset that's not grasping, a mindset that is not like desperately wanting more, 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 which is sort of seems to be the mantra of modern day society, like a mindset which preaches like compassion and kindness, towards like not just generally the general population and all sentient beings. That mindset actually starts to change that, because the mind actually for us as practitioners, the mind has a certain shape, right? So it actually helps to shape the mind in a certain way. And then when your mind starts to be shaped in a certain way, actually the connections between the mind and body are much stronger, and actually you'll be able to access some of these deeper meditative states much more easily, and achieve higher levels of energy and higher levels of health than someone who's hasn't sort of trained the mind in the right way. So you can imagine someone who's constantly angry at the world, who's always like wanting more, he's going to find it very difficult to enter into these practices. And he's going to have a lot of like maybe interpersonal conflicts and stuff like that, which are going to create obstacles for him creating a healthy space or healthy time to practice. So for me, all of these things are all of a piece. It's like you need to cultivate your outlook and your mind, and then also train, your body, and everything can be very supportive in creating an environment where one can flourish.
So that makes so much sense. I think that, in this day and age with social media and you have like digital everything and you're just constantly on your phone and getting notifications. It's something that should be top of mind for everybody, right? Because it's so hard to quiet your mind, right? And yeah, I love that, the application to how to quiet your mind and how can you make that sort of like a daily practice. I think that that's one of the hardest things for people to do, right? Can you offer any advice for, somebody like myself, right? I had the Calm app, I did it. I was doing it like 5 minutes a day, then I upped it to like 15 minutes a day, for maybe a few years, and then you forget, right? And then life gets busy. And so it's like, how do you start? And then how do you kind of continue? And how do you then improve, as you mentioned, right? Really make that really a part of your life.
I think starting is hardest, and I don't have a lot of advice about how to, start. I find that a lot of students, like they start and then they fall off the wagon. But my advice is that it is actually just to pr is really to persevere. The beauty of these practices that I practice, as opposed to, relying on an app or whatever, is that actually they're very cumulative. So that as you start to practice this, and if you start to incorporate it into your daily lifestyle, you start, for instance, you start, oh, I might start with just a very gentle feeling of qi, and then later as the feeling becomes stronger, it starts to build on itself, right? So it's like, oh, actually I like the state that I'm feeling when I'm practicing, and I start to feel that it carries over into my everyday life. And that is, once you can get into that reinforcing loop, then it becomes much easier. It's very much like, like you're learning to play golf or learning to play tennis. In the beginning, it's very frustrating, in trying to hit the ball and miss every time. But then
It's
once
such
you
a
start to
mental
hit the
game.
ball, and you yeah, then there's a little bit of this feedback. So, and the nice thing about Qigong, if you can find a good teacher and a good lineage, is that there are actual milestones to practice. So you can say, okay, I've finally, for my first milestone was like just to build a dantian, it's like just to strengthen the field in my my lower abdomen, which you know might will also help with some of the women's problems that you mentioned. Yeah, then you feel okay. I've started to feel experience the feeling of the field. I experience heat in my lower abdomen. I'm feeling much more energized and aware. And then later on, the breathing starts to shift. The breathing becomes much longer, much deeper. And then even in daily life, I'm finding that I'm not getting as annoyed by other people. Like I'm not as reactive. I'm and then then even then and then the next step is like my personality might start to shift, that I might actually start to see things from multiple different perspectives instead of like going straight into this reactivity. So the people who I've seen who persevered, that's what keeps them going along the path. Yeah. And then that's how it shifts your everyday life. But the first step is the hardest. I have many, many students who just drop out, after the first few months because they feel that they're not getting it, because it does require quite a lot of time commitment in the beginning just to get the process going. Yeah.
I think that when I talked to my friends and I told them I was starting Tai Chi, they're like, "Oh, but it's so slow, you know? How do you get into it?" Because everybody's all, not that I'm young, but a lot of young people are really into HIIT and like, you're like cycling and, everybody's really into these like super fast, super intense exercises these days where you're like sweating. And so how does somebody like that try it, because I think that that person similarly can they, it's hard for them to do yoga. I find it hard to do yin yoga, like, so how, what is the first step and what is that sort of pull factor?
I think the pull factor is like trying to meet more people who get who derived a lot of benefit from this from these practices, and just to maybe just set aside a certain period of time that you want to give it a like your best shot, because like I said, these things can be quite addictive after a while. I mean, it's another some almost like almost another form of addiction to offset your everyday addiction, right? So it's like you say, okay, I'm going to set aside 3 months that I really want to try and give this practice my all. I've talked to my friends and they said, they have all these good things happening. Like, and during winter, they don't feel cold. Their hands are not cold. They wake up in the morning with boundless energy. It just feels like a shot of coffee. Then I'm just going to give it, 3 months and then start that regular practice. And if after maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks, you start to feel, oh, okay, things are starting to shift. And that, I think that's the best way to approach it. Yeah, for me, all of the other, like, these very intense practices are great when you're young, but as you start to go get older, they actually can be quite depleting. So, we as you, when you hit a certain age, you need practices which are very nourishing in order to balance. It's not to say that they're bad, but in order to balance practices where you're giving out all this time.
I love that. I think that we don't think about nourishing enough. That whole idea of really feeding your body and it's being long term. And there is a lot of like you give and you give, and like whether it's like your really intense, trail running and your HIIT exercises, and then you have your work and your family commitments and all that stuff. So I think that, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't think people think about nourishment for yourself
I
at
think
all.
people, I think people need to just really, it's also a time to spend with yourself. So because when you're practicing these things, it's actually very much an internal practice. And I think, as modern people, we don't have that space. So it's very important to also create that space within your own daily life. I think a lot of people, like you mentioned, your friend has resistance to doing yoga or all of these things. It's because there's a lot of resistance to sitting with yourself. There's usually a level of this, psychological discontent that we feel that causes us that not to want to calm down. And sometimes very intensive practice is used as a form of distraction. to make us
Yeah.
avoid working with the things which might be very important for us. So this is actually quite a confronting practice, because when you start to actually go inside going yourself, you start to realize, oh, this is not working, that's not working. But then I'm making a commitment to myself that I want to start to address some of these things.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think the quiet mind is can be daunting for some people, including myself.
I just wanted to say something. I think you mentioned also, like, mental, the mental practice, mindfulness, and also, like, mental issues as well, previously. So I think the good thing about the Qigong practice is that it also helps you shift some of your negative mental states. So I know a lot of people might be suffering, like, from depression or anxiety. It's very common in the modern world, and a lot of this depression and anxiety is actually sort of stuck emotional energy in the body. And if you do yoga, you maybe you've heard that, okay, we do carry a lot of emotions in the body. So one very strong part of this Qigong sort of medicine or medit practice is that we move to start to remove some of this, like, stuck energy in the body, and then there's almost like a purging process. So over time, as you practice, you start to find, oh, actually, I'm starting to feel less angry, I'm starting to feel less sad, less depressed, because this stuff is starting to be released from the body.
Actually, like in our last practice, at the end of it, like during, you feel like, you have this energy, and then at the end, it's not like you're sweating and you're not, maybe I had like a little bit of sweat, but I did feel, I walked out feeling lighter for some reason, like, and I did feel like my palms were like hot, and I felt energized in that way, that it feels different than doing like a spin class,
Because actually, our bodies also, from a Chinese medicine perspective, as you know, we do have carry a lot of pathogens in the body, like, damp or wind or cold. So when we do the Qigong practice, part of that is also expelling some of these pathogens. So that's maybe the reason why you feel lighter, because your body is might have been carrying a lot of damp or other kinds of pathogens. Yeah, so it is a different kind of practice it altogether, right? So sometimes when you do spin class, it's just about circulation and sweating, but there might not be such a strong sort of purging type aspect.
So Bernard, I would love to know, what is your daily wellness routine? Like, please share that with us.
I think it's been evolving with time. I do because yeah, I do dedicate a lot of time to my personal practice. So I do spend, like, maybe an hour and a half, like, on sort of my martial practices, basic training, and then in the evenings, I do spend an hour and a half doing sitting qigong, sitting meditation, where I'm just moving the energy. But that's sort of my qigong practice. But I supplement that with a little bit of cardio. I play I've been playing a lot of pickleball
Oh, you
recently,
have
and
been so popular.
and some strength training as well. So for me, it's very much trying to integrate the Eastern and the Western. It's not just about doing purely the Eastern stuff, but I need to have a good diet as well. I also, like, having adequate sleep. Yeah, so all of those things are all of a piece in my practice. But I this has become so much a part of my life that I definitely, every day do try to do that, at least an hour and a half of my Qigong practice. So that is what keeps me pr sort of progressing.
That was much to learn on that. And final question, which, we'll be asking all my guests on this podcast. What is your personal secret to looking and feeling your best?
I think there are no real secrets, except for like Korean plastic surgery. But
Yeah.
other than that, I think the basic thing is getting the basic things right. It's I think yeah, diet, sleep, exercise, and the most important thing that I would say is just to restrict your screen time. This is actually like a huge drain on our qi, and especially for women, it's a huge drain on the blood, the blood system. So, the more that we spend on our screens, we're actually unaware of that we are sort of leaking a lot of energy. So it's no wonder that we sort of feel kind of depleted. We need that coffee or whatever to pick us up if we're spending like 4 or 6 hours
Yeah.
on the screen every day. So that would be, my number one recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's super helpful. I think that a lot of us, we don't A, realize how much time we spend on the screen, and then B, you just think that, I know a lot of people just relax on the screen, right? And so you don't realize while you're relaxing, you're actually depleting a lot of that chi, that
Yeah.
energy. And so that's definitely a huge takeaway for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you actually started actually ha having a bit of a sitting practice, you realize that if you actually close your eyes and you go inwards, then you can actually feel the energy kind of cycle in on itself. And then when you actually open your eyes again and then you start looking at the screen, you can actually feel that everything is like suddenly like from cycling inside starts to go out. So once you realize that, it's like, oh, I need to do something about this habit. And I agree it's not that always that easy to address because there's an element of addiction to it. I mean, I'm also addicted to my certain Netflix programs and
Oh, yeah, for
certain
sure.
YouTube influencers and stuff like that. Yeah.
But I think it's, for us, or for myself, it's really like baby steps making, as you mentioned, I like the idea that it's setting those milestones and at least like that like okay, you're progressing, and getting to that next level and that you can feel the difference. I think that those are things because in sort of traditional practices, a lot of sometimes or a lot of times it's slower, right? You don't have that instant gratification. I think with like last time it was like with Tai Chi and Qigong, a lot of people felt like that sort of you do feel lighter, you feel like, oh my God, my hands are hot, especially in, coming out in January, right? It's such a unique feeling, but you don't have that. It's not the same thing as like you finish a spin class, you know that you had like you expelled like 600 calories. So it's quite it's very different. So I think that sharing this practice and sort of these philosophies into long-term health, I'm very grateful.
I would just say that it's also very different because like we have to kind of take the long view with these things because when you find that you start to build these practices in your body, they stay. It's not I used to lift weights when I was in my 20s. I mean, I still lift a little bit of weight, but it's you find that if you don't lift weights for a couple of weeks, everything kind of goes and then everything sort of like turns back to fat. And it's actually very a little bit depressing. But with these practices, once you kind of like change the way you breathe or like you're getting the chi to move, even if you don't practice for a week or two, it's also okay. It's just like you continue to enjoy these benefits. Not like I feel, oh, I'm always needing to go there and it's like this up and down binging dieting cycle. It's more like a nice smooth
Yeah,
progression.
that's a good takeaway. Yeah, well, thank you so much. This is super interesting, and I think that there are a lot of takeaways that people can do. So, thank you so much, and thank you so much for being
No,
my
you're welcome.
first guest.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nucci podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.